What if I told you that America's richest secret isn't hidden in Wall Street vaults or Silicon Valley boardrooms, but in the unpaid labor happening in millions of homes right now? While other wealthy nations built childcare centers and universal healthcare after World War II, America made a different choice. It dismantled its wartime childcare system and sent women home. The result? A country that doesn't lack a safety net, it just expects women to be that net. They shoulder nearly 2 hours more unpaid work daily than men, earn substantially less, and when they buckle under the weight, society whispers that they're simply not trying hard enough. This isn't about individual failure. It's about a system designed to extract everything from women while convincing them the exhaustion is their own fault. America didn't always abandon its citizens this thoroughly. Roosevelt's New Deal gave us Social Security, Medicare, minimum wage protections, and the 40-hour work week. But wealthy business interests saw these protections as threats to profits. They imported neoliberal economists like Milton Friedman, who preached that corporations exist solely to maximize shareholder value while taxes and regulations strangle prosperity. Through massive propaganda campaigns, they sold Americans a seductive lie. Cutting taxes on the wealthy would create prosperity for everyone. When Reagan took office, these economists orchestrated the Great Risk Shift. Social welfare spending plummeted, while responsibility for health, security, and well-being transferred from government and employers to individuals and families. Despite promises of widespread wealth, economic growth actually slowed as riches concentrated among the highest earners. Consider Akari, who lost her partner to gun violence and juggled 3 part-time jobs totaling 50 hours weekly, earning barely $3,000 monthly while relying on food pantries. When she added weekend manufacturing shifts, 12-hour days that meant leaving her children from Friday evening until Monday morning, her daughter developed PTSD from effectively losing both parents. The cruelest twist? The extra income pushed her over benefit cliffs, making her ineligible for welfare and public housing. The DIY society isn't a functioning system. It's an illusion maintained by women's invisible labor, and it's breaking them. From childhood, American society grooms girls to become the safety net. While boys run free, girls learn caregiving, emotional labor, and self-sacrifice. Cultural conditioning equates womanhood with motherhood so thoroughly that when it's not enough, laws and barriers force women into motherhood whether they want it or not. Brooke never wanted children, but in Republican-controlled Indiana, she faced obstacles to abortion and ended up having her son. She took a minimum-wage childcare job she loved, but that barely kept them afloat. Her promotion to assistant director, earning just $25,000 annually, left her in precarity when the raise made her ineligible for government assistance. Nearly half of all U.S. pregnancies are unintended, and teen pregnancy rates are more than double those in Denmark. The 2022 Dobbs decision overturning Roe v. Wade has only tightened this trap. Audrey became pregnant when her husband disregarded her explicit wishes during pandemic stress. Though she recognized this as assault, her church community's beliefs against both abortion and divorce left her feeling trapped. The financial reality, managing childcare and $40,000 in debt on a single income while potentially losing health insurance, made leaving seem impossible. Even women who never planned motherhood get thrust into caregiving. When Sylvia was 15, her brother's addiction left her raising his children. She abandoned college plans, reflecting a broader pattern where millions of children affected by the opioid crisis are placed with relatives, usually women, who receive minimal support. Without paid leave or affordable childcare, employers can reject mothers from male-dominated jobs or relegate them to lower-paying positions. Locked out of high-paying careers, women fill gaps in failing systems, childcare, healthcare, education, elder care, through underpaid jobs or unpaid work at home. Erin and her husband Mark earned $30,000 combined in small-town Indiana. When their son Carson was born in 2016, they faced impossible math: no paid leave, too much income for public childcare assistance but too little for private care, and no family help. They tried split shifts, Aaron working nights, Mark working days, but sleep deprivation became unbearable. Quitting made financial sense. They qualified for Medicaid, WIC, and EITC, though Aaron struggled with the stigma. Nearly 38 million Americans lived in poverty in 2022, with another 25 million hovering just above. Nearly a quarter have no emergency savings. This precarity disproportionately affects Black, Latino, and Indigenous communities. Limited employment prospects for Black men force women like Patricia to be both primary breadwinner and caregiver, a reality for 69% of mothers in the lowest income families and 68% of Black mothers, compared to 30% in the highest income households. In precarious communities, resilient women become the default resource for solving everyone's problems. The more gaps they fill, the easier it becomes for privileged women to escape by outsourcing domestic labor to more vulnerable women. Money buys women more choices, but these choices arrive morally fraught. Holly and Kathleen paid over $1,200 monthly for childcare, yet their financial security depended on exploiting underpaid workers, primarily women of color. When Holly raised quality concerns, the director explained that affordable prices meant hiring staff willing to work for low wages without benefits, causing devastating turnover. In the U.S., childcare workers, over 90% women, are among the lowest paid workers, rarely receiving health insurance or paid leave. Norway solved this by removing childcare from market pressures through government funding, with workers earning equivalent to $40,000 annually, double U.S. wages, with comprehensive benefits. Even women who outpace their husbands economically still shoulder default caregiving. Despite earning $30,000 more than her teacher husband, tenure-track professor Virginia became the default parent due to her gender and perceived job flexibility. When their two-year-old needed quarantine after COVID exposures, Virginia managed childcare while working remotely. "I've paid $2,000 to have 12 days of care in the last 6 weeks. Even when gender roles reverse, inequities persist. Ivan, among only 7% of stay-at-home dads, made this choice because his wife Nancy earned more than double his income. Unlike most breadwinner fathers, Nancy actively supported Ivan, taking their daughter nightly so he could rest and arranging childcare when he was diagnosed with cancer." Rather than acknowledging women's overwhelming burdens, those in power gaslight struggling women, blaming problems on laziness or poor choices. Neoliberal think tanks promote a success sequence: finish high school, work full-time, marry before having children, claiming it guarantees financial stability. This promise is hollow. Marriage fails to provide security for many women. Despite following the traditional path, Jocelyn's husband couldn't support the family on minimum wage. She worked grueling hours as cashier and house cleaner while managing childcare. Their split-shift arrangement bred frustration and ultimately domestic violence, prompting Jocelyn to leave despite religious beliefs against divorce. Higher education doesn't guarantee security either. Despite earning therapy degrees, Lillian's Department of Children's Services job paid only $30,000 annually without benefits. With pregnancy complications, she took unpaid leave and relied on WIC assistance. Even STEM careers don't save women. Despite Teresa's engineering degree, MBA, and $125,000 biotech salary, she faced workplace hostility toward pumping and was repeatedly passed over for promotions to support her husband's career, despite earning twice his salary and carrying significant student debt. The good choices rhetoric justifies not building a real safety net. Americans embrace rags-to-riches narratives while harboring disdain for the poor, believing success comes solely from individual choices. This meritocracy myth undermines desperately needed support systems. The pandemic proved what's possible when we support people. The CARES Act's $2.2 trillion transformed lives. 20-year-old Sierra, a Black single mother on minimum wage, could finally stay in her apartment and spend quality time with her son without constant financial stress. Yet, Congress cut most support by early 2022. Child tax credit payments, the eviction moratorium, and relief checks ended abruptly, pushing child poverty from 11 to 17%, higher than pre-pandemic levels. Universal programs work. They amplify benefits for the most vulnerable while leaving almost everyone better off. Universal school lunches improve nutrition and test scores for all children, with greatest benefits for low-income kids who avoid stigmatization. Iceland's 1975 women's strike offers a powerful model. When women took a day off from all work, paid and unpaid, men suddenly experienced the burden women had been carrying. This action catalyzed real change, helping Iceland elect its first female president and develop policies that dramatically improved life for women and children. We need a union of care, bridging gaps between care industries, paid and unpaid workers, and caregivers and recipients. Imagine care work valued on par with tech, where caregivers earn living wages without juggling multiple jobs, where families have real choices without pitting precarity against morality. The question isn't whether we can afford a real safety net, it's whether we can afford to keep breaking the people holding everything up.